Hello and welcome to episode 41 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast. Once again, a bored man has got access to a microphone and will use it to be wrong on the internet. Once again, I am that bored man. My name is Graham Lee. The topic of this episode is software engineering a profession? The reason I always slow down in the middle of the topic of this episode is I always think, do I mean the topic of this week's episode? Do I mean the topic of today's episode? No, I don't. Do I want to say episode or show or podcast? Anyway, that happens, and that is why there is a weirdly slow statement for me to make, even though I do the same thing every time. Regardless, the topic is software engineering a profession? Well, let's ask, what even is software engineering? Is there agreement over that? I think some people use it as a fancy phrase for meaning programming. Some people use it more broadly to mean any of the activities that are engaged in when you are creating software. Some people use it in quite a sort of restrictive sense. They mean like creating software when you are following a systematic set of practices or like a defined method that has some scientific backing to it. The original creation of the phrase software engineering was in the call, not in the proceedings of the NATO conference on software engineering in 68, but in the call for that conference. So the people who chaired the conference, who invited the speakers and the delegates, called it software engineering to be provocative, to say, you know, how is it that we should think about the construction of software and the way in which programming and the other activities are done? Why don't we propose an engineering method? So it was an analogy, and it was not necessarily an analogy that many people in the field were already making. But because we're called software engineers, it then became a question, are we a discipline of engineering? Should we be licensed engineers? Should we be licensed professionals in some other sense? Should there be a profession that is like computer work or programming or software development or software engineering or information communication technologist? And if so, should that be exclusive? Should it be licensed? Should we have more prestige in society in return for a sort of self-governing body of knowledge and code of practice? This debate sort of died out recently. Even the people in the post software engineering schools, like the software craftsmanship schools, aren't really pushing for everybody to organize under their banner. There isn't a sense that computing needs to organize, whether on a guild model like craftsmanship or a professional model like licensed engineering. There's more of a sort of expectation that people are just going to do whatever, and it would be nice if some of us could help them think about other responsibilities than just like amusing themselves with coding. Now, that doesn't mean that when this discussion died out in the 1990s, it was because everyone agreed and the conclusion was that we shouldn't professionalise. If you look at the States, the Association for Computing Machinery had been pushing for a sort of licensed model, although a lot of people within the association had been pushing against it and saying it should only be for safety critical software. Most people should be allowed to write software, except for those people who are in safety critical applications like control systems for engines or weapons or medical devices and so on. And their reason for pulling back from this effort was that the activities that they were engaging in were unlikely to ever actually affect the production of safety critical software, which was the only part of the field that they felt needed or would significantly benefit from licensure. So they were working with the IEEE, the Institution of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, on a software engineering body of knowledge, and the working group of that body of knowledge eventually sort of de-scoped safety critical software from the from the body of knowledge. And so if the only reason you want professionalism in software is to ensure that safety critical software is developed professionally, and the only activities you're engaging in explicitly remove safety critical software from their scope, then you're going to you're not working on tasks that are compatible with your goals. So they pulled away, but they never kind of said, right, that's it, professionalism is done. They said that they would continue to work on collaborative projects with the IEEE where they were compatible with the ACM's goals of advancing the status of computing as a profession. So they're still interested in professional computing. They're not interested in the activities of professionalization that they had been engaged in through like the 80s and the 90s. Compare with the UK, where actually the British Computer Society, or BCS, the Chartered Institute for IT, as they're now actually called, is still kind of engaging in recognition of the supposedly sort of superior social position of its membership. You know, so you can become an MBCS, a membership member of the BCS CFIT, or FBCS, a fellow of blah blah blah. That is a chartered institution with a royal charter, which I believe is in collaboration with the IEEE, which is the British Institution for Electrical Engineering. And they accredit software engineering degrees. Now, most university degrees in computering broadly in the UK are computer science degrees, not software engineering degrees. And this is, again, something that was brought about by the ACM. You know, they wanted to produce a curriculum because having accredited degrees in your field is an easy way to separate the people who have the specialist knowledge in your field from the people who don't have the specialist knowledge, and therefore a way to mark them out as distinct and ergo trained members of your worthy and learned profession. And they were basically tooling around for a name. You know, in a lot of Europe, these degrees are called informatics. They could be called software engineering if they're more applied. And the ACM deliberately went down the route of the more sort of academic and theoretical computer science name, but also curriculum. They wanted to show that there was a scientific basis to the application of computing. But of course, teaching people the theory doesn't necessarily translate into practice. There's a difference between teaching someone say mechanical engineering and teaching them the physical school of mechanics, or giving them a physics degree. Like, you can have a physics degree without being any good at engineering. You can have an engineering degree without a complete grounding in physics. So, by the way, this sort of running out of steam of the professionalism of IT occurs at the same time as the sort of running out of steam of the social science of professions. So at the same time that the practical interest in defining computing as a profession died out, the theoretical interest in understanding what were professions and what makes them different from mere occupations was also dying out. And these are due to common forces, and probably the correlation of these forces means that neither of these fields are particularly going to resurge anytime soon. Mostly change in market forces. The so-called golden age of the professions is up to around 1960, so middle part of the 20th century, post-World War II in the US, the UK, and post-war Europe. And the professions then were mostly undertaken by people in self-employed arrangements or partnerships, acting as agents for their clients. What's happened since then is that businesses have become much larger, have had a much bigger impact on the economy. And so more people are employed, and then they have much less autonomy. They have much less capability to define how their work is done and who their work is done for when those things are outsourced to their managers or to their employers. And also, the market became globalized. So there's a transnational market in various services now. There's a global market in services. So being able to acquire all of the trappings of professionalism, so the social cachet, the increased salaries, the legal protection in one market when your customers are in a different market, doesn't have a lot of value. In fact, it may hold you back because it means that in that marketplace you're uncompetitive with people who will do the same work without the professional recognition in another jurisdiction. This idea of jurisdiction in professions is important, not only for like sort of local jurisdiction. You know, do I have a royal charter to be a software engineer, and are the people who don't have royal charters to be software engineers in the UK forbidden from like writing software? That is like on a classical model of professionalism, that is your sort of end game. You can get all of the bits in place without having like legal exclusivity, and then that is the thing that finally sort of detaches your profession from the rest of society and makes it this like mutually self and society serving sort of separate part of the whole system. But it isn't necessary. But even if I have all of that in the UK, as a software engineer, there's also the question of whose toes are the BCS treading on when they say software engineering or computing should be a distinct profession? Well, obviously the BCS have identified the electrical and electronic engineering world, and so they've partnered with the IEEE to try and keep their interests aligned and to stop conflicting with that society. But what about the learned societies of, say, maths, which is obviously the basis of computer science, and a lot of computer science is pure mathematics, or of the learned societies of like physics, because computers are ultimately realizations of quantum physics. What about like the professional societies of the various fields in which computers are applied? Is financial technology fundamentally a software activity, or is it fundamentally a financial activity undertaken by financial planners? Is health tech medical, or is it computing? And if you try to professionalize software engineers and say they have to follow our code of practice, is that compatible with the medical code of practice that they might have to follow if they're building medical technology? My actual job title is research software engineer. I work in academia. Does being a software engineer, if there were a distinct like profession of software engineer, would that conflict or be compatible with the research goals of my university? There's this movement to recognize research software engineer as a distinct occupation or possibly profession. Whose toes is that treading on? Because is that getting in the way of the BCS defining computing or software engineering? Is that getting in the way of academia, which is already a fairly self-governing craft-like sort of guild-like organization? How do you balance the needs of these various organizations as you grow a new occupation or profession out of the division of existing labor? The final thing that has changed that has meant that there's less interest in professionalism in general in sort of the modern weird societies is that there's a lot more market freedom, and that means that there is less opportunity for a professional organization to act in like exclusive or anti-competitive ways. Now, professions would typically have, say, no advertising clauses and no customer poaching clauses, so that there's an idea that once you have engaged with an agent for, you know, as your solicitor, say, that is your solicitor, and you aren't going to get someone else coming along going, oh, I'll do cheaper, because they've signed up to this code of practice that says that they won't do that. When they aren't gathering the clients, but it's their employers doing it, and their employers operate in a free market, there's, you know, no expectation that they would follow those sort of you know, gentle person's agreements. So all of those things, the globalization of the marketplace, the increase idea of like market freedom and lack of economic oversight, and the consolidation away from an agency client model into an employer employee and producer customer model, all of these things conspire to make professionalism perhaps a little less valuable, and possibly harder, as we've seen with the jurisdictional questions. A profession has to sort of sprout out of an existing field, and so somehow find a position where it can say, or its members can say, this is a prestigious role in its own right, without removing from the prestige or conflicting with the prestige that the existing organization and the existing collection of professions already enjoys. Every new profession could be potentially diluting the value of being in a profession, because now, like, you know, any old person can be a professional. So what would professional software engineering look like? It's an interesting question as to whether there even is a point where an occupation becomes a profession. And in this, what I was describing as the golden age of professions in the mid-20th century, you know, most of the research was in ontology. Like, what is it that professionals or professional associations or professional societies do, or how are they organized, that is different from everybody else? And then in the sort of later part of the 20th century, it became more about professionalism or professionalizing. It became about what is it that people undertaking an occupation do in order to transfer from being people in an occupation to being professionals. And so like the ideas behind this are all sort of half a century old at least. But there are basically four broad ideas of what goes into a profession, even if there maybe isn't an idea in the 21st century as to how these come about. The first is expert knowledge. Now, do we have expert knowledge in software engineering? I would say yes, there is a lot of expert knowledge. There is the software engineering body of knowledge. It is a few hundred pages long. It contains well over 10 knowledge areas. I think it's 14 knowledge areas, although I don't have a copy to hand and am not in the habit of reading it every bedtime. But, you know, there's you've got like the coding, but then also the design, the requirements engineering, the testing with both verification and validation. You've got deployment, operations, maintenance. There may well be things that I haven't thought of that go into the SWEBOC as well. There's a lot that you can know in order to be a software engineer, but there's also a lot you can get by without knowing. And so there is an argument against software engineering as a profession that requires distinct knowledge. You know, there's this movement at the moment for like code academies, for code schools, these things that offer a short program of typically like a few weeks or a couple of months of learning how to code in JavaScript, Python, whatever, and then like promising, with some like scare quotes around the word promise, that you'll be able to find a job. And you know, some of them are sort of free at point of entry, and they take a finder's fee when you get your first job, or you know, a tithe or whatever. Now, those are a recycling of an idea that I think was called the data control school, or the data processing school, back in sort of the 70s, when there was again a large need for programmers and a short supply, or a like perceived short supply. Just give people like the tools to basically do the job, and then get them into the job as fast as you can. That, if that is possible, if that is successful, then obviously there isn't the sort of expert knowledge in software engineering that there is in, say, medicine, where you spend 7 years you know, learning your craft before you're allowed to practice, or veterinary science, or law, or any of the you know, sort of more traditionally recognized professions. But you know, on the other hand, if you don't believe that the coding school people are effective enough at writing software, taking into account the needs of themselves, their employers, and society, and that therefore, like, more knowledge is needed before you can actually you know, meet some kind of minimum bar for professional capability. And remember, this is when I say minimum bar, I'm talking about for an entry level software engineer. I'm not saying like you have to have done 20 years experience before you're worth talking to. That, I mean, that's a horrible idea in any sense. But you know, if what you believe is that there is a collection of knowledge you should be able to demonstrate before you can be an entry-level software engineer, then you would probably say that the code school graduates aren't embodying the principles of software engineering, even at an entry level, and that there is this expert knowledge. Arguments on both sides. I'm trying to sort of present both of them in this episode. The second broad idea, after expert knowledge, which is not to say that it comes after expert knowledge, it's to say that I am listing it after that. So this isn't a recipe for professionalization. This is the ideas that go into a profession. The second one is technical autonomy. So are we left alone to define how we do our jobs? Well, sometimes yes and sometimes no. And I think that like there's this big distinction now, you know, between like the sort of agency model, hello Alex, if you're listening, and the you know, the sort of in-house employee or feature factory model, where the agency model is basically saying, right, I'm the expert at software. Here's my reputation, here's my list of references, like, tell me what your problem is, and then I will use computers to solve that problem in a clever way. You don't need to you know, understand how I do it, you don't need to tell me how to do it, you need to sit back and watch me do it. And that's like basically what you get when you hire a lawyer. You don't say, I want you to like press these buttons in Word when you write my will. You say, I want my estate to be divided up in this way, and can you like make that into a functioning will? So again, arguments for and against, because like the like more sort of product customer relationship is, I will, you know, give you my labor time, my labor power in return for some money, and you know, You're my employee, you tell me what to do. And so, like, you know, if your manager is saying you have to do TDD on this project, or your manager is saying you don't have to do TDD on this project, or you are asking for and being turned down, you know, whatever, like, technical, processes you want to follow. Like, if you're asking for hardening sprints, which I think are a bad idea, but if you're asking for hardening sprints and, you know, being given or refused permission to do them, then you are not acting as a professional. You are acting as, you know, as like a division of labor in a factory. You are acting as someone who does a small part of a task and is told how to do it. Now, I think that as sort of originally stated, the whole idea of the Agile Manifesto in like 2001 was this step on the way to professionalism. It was saying, even though like you know, some of the people who were signatories worked in big companies like Chrysler, it was saying, look, we know how to write software. You let us write software, in return for which we will work with you regularly to make sure that we are writing the correct software, but we will not work with you on making sure that we are writing software correctly. That is our business. So this whole thing of self-organizing teams, but in return for which frequent customer collaboration, the idea that individuals and interactions are bigger and more valuable than processes and tools, was kind of saying we want responsibility for our work back, in which, in return for which we will work responsibly. And that was the sort of, you know, the early glimmer of agile software development being a professional approach to software development, an agent approach, where the agile software developer is saying, tell me what the problem is, tell me what the business needs, and I will do the software thing because like I know how to do software. However, we can also see in the development of Agile the sort of externalization of bits of this process and know-how to named others. So rather than a self-organizing team, we have a named Scrum Master and a named Product Owner, and they are responsible for prioritization and for process. So like we're no longer self-organizing and we're no longer self-managing. We're being told what to do in what order and how to do it by two external people. So we've sort of gone back to a Taylorian like division of labor and scientific management approach. The third big idea in a profession is, and I'm going to use exactly the phrase that I found in a paper describing the history of the sociology of professionalism. The third big idea is normative orientation towards service, i.e. the idea that I and other members of my profession will put our service to the rest of our profession, to the rest of our employers and colleagues and stakeholders, and to the rest of society at large, on an equal or greater footing than like the performance of our own work. And you know, if you look at the British Computer Society Code of Ethics or the ACM IEEE Code of Ethics, you will see those ideas codified in as ethical imperatives for a profession of computing rather than software engineering, but nonetheless you'll see them codified. Most software engineers probably don't subscribe to those codes of ethics or haven't even read them, and you know, certainly aren't beholden to them. I happen to be a member of the ACM, not the BCS, and so I have to act within the bounds of the code of ethics and uphold that code of ethics, otherwise I risk losing my membership. You know, on the other hand, we could ask what risk that is. You know, what do I suffer from losing that membership? It's not like it is a highlight of my CV, and it's not like I couldn't get another job as a computer programmer if I weren't a member of the ACM. I would lose access to its resources, although I also get those through my employer. I'd lose access to its network. And, you know, we could debate, and the society, the association, would probably have opinions on the value of that network. But, like, it's not like if you fall out of the Chartered Institute for Software Engineering, then you can never work as a software engineer in the UK or any Commonwealth country ever again. That's just not a thing that happens. Often, like, individual software engineers do have like codes of ethics and do, you know, talk about them and uphold them or at least point out when other people have violated them. But if any one software engineer refuses to do an unethical job, there is another one or another 10 around who would do it instead. If the person who had written the defeat device of Volkswagen had said, no, I'm not implementing that code, they would have hired another software engineer and they would not have taken long to do it. If the people who work at Facebook on promoting anti-democratic data gathering for political advertising said, we're not going to do that anymore, they would just open the door and 500 more software engineers would walk through and that would get done anyway. Like, there's no real normative orientation towards service sector-wide in software engineering, even though there are undoubtedly individuals who do have high moral standards based on their own internal codes. There is no shared code across the profession. And finally, the fourth broad idea in a profession of software engineering would be high status and income. And this can include, but doesn't have to include, regulation and exclusivity. So this could just be everyone recognises that the vets are a special class of people who have a lot of special knowledge and would rather go to a trained vet than random dog improver in order to get surgery for their pet. Now, actually, vets are a recognised profession, but you can imagine that there certainly was a time in the past when they weren't. But you can have that sort of prestige, that social cachet, the higher salary, the recognition that you are a self-organising and self-governing group of people well before. And that you've got a specialised body of knowledge, and all of the other trappings of a profession, well before you get to the point where you have, what is in the UK a royal charter saying that you are a profession, and well before you get to the point where you have an exclusive monopoly on the trade and can say nobody else is allowed to be a veterinarian, or in our case, a software engineer. Now, we obviously don't have the exclusivity, and we go back to this global marketplace idea. There are places like Canada, certain states in the US. The US one is quite interesting because there are states in the US, I think possibly every state in the US, where you have to be you have to pass an exam to be an engineer. And so all that means is that software engineers shouldn't use the word engineer in their job title. It doesn't mean that software engineering is exclusively performed by the people with the appropriate title. So, there's really, we have high salaries. There's no two ways about that. And that's typically because we have both a very large demand on our resources and a very large rate of exploitation, by which I mean that the profits in producing software are so insanely great that you can pay a programmer or a software engineer a large amount of money and still only a small fraction of their time is being spent on reproducing their own social condition, and the rest of it is just going to surplus, generating surplus, i.e. profit for the employer. If you look at Apple's financials, you may well find that the rate of surplus that they are generating is millions of dollars per employee. And if you look at their average salary, it's well below millions of dollars. Even their average software engineering salary is likely to be high tens, low hundreds of thousands of dollars. So they're getting 10 times the profit as they are paying for every software engineer. It's a no-brainer if you're the employer to just say, have our money. We will make much, much more money off of your labour in return for doing that. But do we have the high status? Do people see software engineering as this sort of prestigious and lofty aim that a select few have been called to, or that, you know, only the cream of society can get into, in the same way that, you know, okay, maybe like not everybody has like positive opinions of lawyers, club divorcee here, but, you know, everybody has ideas that like lawyers have put a lot of effort into, you know, building their knowledge and offer a service that is required to society. It is the same true of software engineering, even though software engineering has eaten the world? Probably not. So that is the argument about software engineering as a profession, with points presented both in favour and against. Now, why do people argue about this? Why, after, let's say that software as an occupation probably started like around 1950, after the World War II computers started to be applied to commercial uses and university uses, and, you know, came out of the military and into the real world. So we're like 70 odd years into the history of software at this point. Why are people still talking about whether or not it is a profession or should be? Well, is society empowered more by removing boundaries to software engineering knowledge and allowing customers to make more informed and critical demands? In which case, something like software freedom is a good idea, because by making the source code available, even if it requires some level of specialized knowledge to understand and critique, that is available, and you can hire, you can get second opinions at this point. You can say, all right, well, I think your tax calculation software probably does the right thing, but I'm just going to ask this other software engineer what they think of your code, because it's publicly available. I can do that. Is improving computer literacy a good way to improve the quality of software and the benefits of software to society? Or should we go the other way? Should we be acknowledging that there is a lot of mental effort and a lot of skill acquisition and knowledge acquisition and sort of specialized thinking and behavior that goes into this business of software engineering, and giving software engineers the autonomy and the the freedom to do this in the way that they agree is best, in return for which making sure that they use some of that autonomy to self-govern and to ensure that they are collectively acting in the best interests of society? Well, there are arguments on both sides of that. You probably have an opinion one way or the other, or perhaps see benefits to both approaches. You know, let me know what you think. GrahamLee@acm.org. This is a really important topic. As software is eating the world, how should that digestion be controlled? How should the people who create software and the people who are saddled with the software interact and collaborate on ensuring that everybody's needs are satisfied? There will always be arguments in favour of greater individual freedom, greater collective responsibility. Some of these will be ideological in nature, some of these will be expedient in nature, some of these will be appeals to analogy to other fields or to empirical knowledge, and so on. And so, like, this is an important debate to have. There are many different facets to it, and it is going to continue well into the foreseeable future. Maybe they'll even become a distinction, either the ACM's distinction between safety critical and regular software, where one needs to be done in specialized ways and the other one is a bit more laissez-faire. Or maybe there'll be a distinction, as one that Stephen Baker often uses, between white and blue collar computing, where the general sort of writing applications for customers to use is seen as a sort of vocational occupation, and There's other parts of it that are a bit more specialist, require more knowledge, that are more professional, are more white collar. Really interested to hear what you think, how you think computing will develop professionally, how you think it should develop professionally, because those are two different things. Email grahamlee@acm.org, Twitter iwaslee g, Mastodon lee g at mastodon.social. Thanks very much, and I will talk to you again soon.